Hi, everybody. I'm Lacey.
I'm Bailey. And she's
and
Drew.
I'm Drew.
And we're sarcastic, so let's get sinister.
You know how, like, I feel like you've yelled at me in the past for drinking water or eating something right as we're about to do the intro. I mean, and then as soon as her cue is there, she has her water.
I know.
She knew what she was doing.
Mm-hmm. Welcome back fully, Lacey.
Hi, thank you. I'm excited to have a case tonight. Mm-hmm. It's been a while.
It's about time you took on your workload again.
I'm going to start participating again. I actually want to see...
This, oh my god, oh, he's a menace. This cat is literally for sale. He's trash.
Oh, all right, I'm back. We can be in. Go ahead, Lacey.
All right, so I have a case for you guys today that I chose because, among other things, it is about the power of friendship.
Oh my god.
Ew.
I'm so excited to
get out of here.
Too late.
Is there a slideshow?
No, there's not.
Oh. What's the person's
Ran
name?
Out of time. I was going to say, do look her up because she's very pretty. Angie Samota. Samota. I did start to put one together. I got like one picture on it. I was like, I'm not going to waste their time with that. Drew can Google her.
Just have one, like stare at one.
It was really a useful one.
All right, you can start. I'll put together something for you.
All right. So, Angela Samota was born on September 19th, 1964 in Alameda, California. She went by Angie, which is what I'll be calling her. So she was born in California. At some point in her childhood, her family moved to Texas. Don't know a whole lot about her upbringing, but she had a happy childhood by all accounts. She was a bright, social, and ambitious child. After high school, she enrolled at Southern Methodist University in Dallas. She double majored in computer science and electrical engineering.
Oh, wow.
Yes. She was an intelligent and ambitious student. Friends described her as a high achiever. One quote, I watched an episode about this, so I got some quotes in here. What from a friend was, she was the girl every guy wants to date and every girl wants to be. She had a tough academic load and an active social life, and she was in a sorority, but she balanced it all very well. So she was very busy all the time, but handled it well. She was very generous. She was quick to help out her friends. Everybody really liked being around her. At Southern Methodist, she became very, very close friends with a girl named Sheila. As soon as I said it, it felt wrong. Sheila. There she is. Sheila Wysocki. Who described Angie as warm-hearted and compassionate, leaving a lasting impression on everyone she met. Angie and Sheila ended up actually being roommates together at Southern Methodist. She also attracted a lot of male attention, some wanted, some not. She was very pretty. She had a really good personality, so just guys in class. She was active socially. She liked to go out to nightclubs. She would be approached a lot of the time by guys at nightclubs. And she didn't like upsetting people.
Oh.
So she had a hard time, like, being blunt and, like, no, leave me alone, kind of.
People pleaser.
Yeah. There was one particular guy named Henry who was in some
sorry, of her classes. Sorry, Lacey. Drew, mm-hmm. Why are we staring at your forehead?
I'm doing a puzzle.
Rude.
I like to do a puzzle.
All we see is this.
Stop looking at me and look at Angie. I put today together a slideshow so you would look at her. Doesn't she seem fun?
It's hard to miss your pale ass giant forehead.
That's so rude.
Mm.
She's been inside a lot. It's only May.
Lighting is bad. Let me turn out the lights and you can see how tan I look.
One guy named Henry was in a couple of her classes, developed a real kind of like obsession with her. He would show up where she was on campus. He wrote poems about her that he would give her. He would ask her to hang out or to go out with him, and she never, wanted to turn him down. True. So, you know, she would say, oh, I'm so sorry, but I have plans maybe next time, that kind of thing. She wouldn't just, like, shut him down, according to her friend, Anita, who said that she was too kind to tell her him to just leave her alone. We're talking about murder.
Sorry. We haven't gotten to the murder yet.
So what year was this?
The story's going to take place in 84.
Oh, wow. So, like... He had to, like, actively stalk her. And he had to
actively seek her out. This was not, like, social media stalking.
I mean, they're both stalking, I get that, but, like, for some reason, like, the effort just seems...
I was gonna say, one takes more effort.
Yeah.
Really leave your house to do the one.
Like, really dedicate your time.
There was also an ex-boyfriend, Lance Johnson. So they started dating in high school and stayed together through the start of college.
Can I ask?
Yes.
I'm so sorry. What did you say his name was?
Lance.
Lance
Armstrong Johnson.
I genuinely thought you called him Lamp.
Oh.
I heard Lance.
Lamp Johnson.
I thought you said Lamp Johnson, and I was like, that's a ridiculous name. Back it up. Okay. Continue. Okay.
So they started dating in high school. They stayed together through the start of college, and they actually moved in together for a little bit. He ended up dropping out of college. I don't know if he was also going to Southern Methodist or not, because also University of Texas wasn't too far. But anyway, it doesn't matter. He dropped out. He was aggressive. He was unpredictable. Angie eventually broke up with him because she was tired of his behavior. And after they broke up, he would continue to call her. He would show up drunk at her apartments and beg her to get back together with him and just kind of made a general nuisance of himself. So things were good for Angie, but, like, you know, not perfect. There was some stuff she was dealing with.
Lamp was a real asshole.
Lamp was a real asshole. So by the fall of 1984, 20-year-old Angie is in her junior year at Southern Methodist, and she's dating Ben McCall.
Do we like Ben? Bless you.
Bless you. You'll have to decide that for yourself.
Oh,
Ben was a few years older than her. I don't have an age for him. I think mid to late 20s. So a little bit older, but not, like, I don't know, nothing crazy. He was out of college. He was done with college. He worked as a construction supervisor. Things were mostly good between them, but they did have the occasional fight, which generally centered around Angie not having enough time for Ben. Because she was so busy with school and with her friends, according to him, that she just didn't give him, like, enough time.
She has her own hobbies and career.
Yeah, so they had these fights, and they didn't, like, break up and get back together, but they would take, like, a little break, kind of, where they took some, like, took a little space from each other, and then they essentially were breaking up and getting back together, but not calling it that.
It was Rachel and Ross. Rachel.
Yeah.
We were on a break.
Yeah, when our story takes place, when the events of October 12th, 1984 happened, they were together. Okay?
Okay.
So, Friday, October 12th, Angie went to a nightclub with two of her friends, Anita and Russell Buchanan. Russell was kind of a new friend, and he had a bit of a thing for Angie, which Anita says Angie probably did not even notice. Like, she was just kind of clueless to it, but it was just, like, another guy who was interested in her. Sheila was out of town, which is why Sheila didn't come. Ben had to get up early the next morning for work, so even though Angie did ask him several times, she kind of called him a couple times, was like, are you sure? He was like, no, I have work tomorrow. And that's when she invited Russell along, because it was going to be her, Anita, and Ben. And she was like, well, if you're not coming, I'll ask Russ to come. You know? There was a lot going on in town this weekend. They're in Dallas, so that means a lot going on anyway. But also, this was Friday night. Saturday was the big game between University of Texas and University of Oklahoma. So there were a ton of University of Oklahoma students in town. There was, like, alumni. There was, you know, it's Texas football. Everybody's very excited.
It was the big game.
Oklahoma just seems like a very... no offense, boring place to live. So I feel like football is, like, they all they football. Have.
Yeah. So they go to the club. Angie is having a great time. She's going around. She's talking to all these people because she, like, knows everybody. She's friendly with everybody. When they leave the club, the plan was for Anita to stay over at Angie's. So they were going to drop off Russ And then Anita was going to go stay at Angie's. But then when they left, she was like, you know what? I just kind of want to go home. I just don't feel like sleeping over. And Angie was like, okay, no problem. So they dropped off Russ. Angie was driving. Dropped off Russ, and then dropped off Anita. They all lived within a few minutes of each other. They were very close, their apartments. Then she popped over to Ben's place to say goodnight. She stayed for about 15 minutes and then headed home.
Who did? What?
Angie stayed at Ben's for 15 minutes-ish to say goodnight and then head home.
Huh.
I think, considering he wanted to be up early the next morning for work, and that's why he didn't go out clubbing, he was probably not thrilled to be woken up for her to say goodnight for 15 minutes. But anyway, that's none of my business. At 2:17 a.m., dispatch received a 911 call from Ben. He said, and this is the transcript from the call, "My girlfriend called me, said there was a man in her apartment, and now I cannot get her to answer her phone. Her car is here, and she can't or won't answer the door, or can't answer the door." And they said, okay, we'll send somebody out. A couple minutes later, two first responders arrived.
All right, hold on a second. Okay. So, Ben is the boyfriend?
Yes.
Who did they go out with?
Ben did not go out with her. She went out with her friend Anita and her friend Russell.
Russell, okay.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
Ben's a boyfriend. Russell is just a friend who is a boy.
They dropped off Russell.
Mm-hmm.
Angie dropped off Anita.
Yep.
And then Angie went over to Ben's house mm-hmm. to say goodnight.
Yeah.
And then presumably she went home.
Yeah.
Okay.
Is Ben calling from her outside her place or his house? Yeah.
Her place.
Okay.
I thought they lived together. I'm sorry.
They did not. She lives with Sheila.
She lived with Lance.
Yeah, at one point she lived with Lance, and then they broke up.
Okay.
Yep, so, yes. Yeah, so stuck to clarify, she does not live with Ben. She lives with Sheila, and Sheila is out of town, so she was alone in the apartment for the weekend.
Okay, so she went over to Ben's house to say goodnight, mm-hmm. and then Ben followed her home?
Well,
No, he said that she called him,
and said there's a man in the apartment, and so then he went over and then called 911 because he couldn't get her to answer the phone?
Probably.
I mean, I was going to explain all that, but that's
that
is the gist of it.
Okay, go ahead, Lincoln.
Yeah.
It's almost like someone shouldn't be doing puzzles or distracted during the story.
So, a few minutes later, two first responders arrive. One of them goes, they can't, you know, they also knock. Nobody answers. They try the door. It's locked. So one of them goes to the building manager who gives them a key to get into Sheila's apartment and Angie's apartment. I don't know why I went with Sheila. When they entered the apartment, one of the responders recalls seeing a high-heeled shoe in the living room. He thought it was a little bit strange that the other shoe wasn't right there next to it nearby. But they found it down the hall in front of Angie's bedroom. They found Angie's body lying on her bed. She had been raped and stabbed to death. She had been stabbed in the chest so viciously and so many times that it appeared as if her heart had been carved out of her body. It was essentially lying on top of her chest. One of the first responders was talking about how they had seen a lot of pretty bad scenes and then said, quote, "This one was like evil had come in and preyed upon the victim." So, obviously, this appeared to investigators like a crime of passion because of the state of Angie's body, committed by somebody who knew and was angry with Angie. The murder weapon was determined to be a knife from her own butcher block, so they didn't think the murder had been planned. It seemed like a crime of opportunity. Well, crime of passion, I think, generally is also like an opportunity thing.
Yeah.
So Ben was the first person they told because he was there. He was outside. So they went outside and said that they had found Angie. She had been killed. And the first responder who told him that said that he just went kind of blank when he got the news. He didn't cry. There was no kind of outburst. He didn't even really say anything. He was the first person that they interviewed first there, and then they took him in and interviewed him. And they were a little suspicious of his story. So he said that Angie had come to him after the nightclub, woken him up, visited for about 15 minutes, and then left, and he had fallen back asleep. I don't know what time it was that she left his apartment. But anyway, around 1:45 a.m., he woke up to his phone ringing. It was Angie. She told him that she had let a man into her apartment. Her voice was calm. She wasn't like yelling and screaming, but something said seemed off to him. And she said she didn't know what to do. Ben tried asking her questions, but she abruptly said, "I'll call you right back," and hung up. When she didn't immediately call back, he tried calling her. She didn't answer. At this point, he gets into his car and heads over. It's only a couple minutes drive from him. This is before everybody just had cell phones. It's 1984. But he had actually been provided one of those like gigantic, bulky, early cell phones through his job. And he kept it in his car. So on the way there, he tried again to call her and she didn't answer. So he gets there. He goes up to her door. It's locked. She's not answering when he knocks on it. He goes back to his car cell phone and he calls the police. So this is when the call comes in. So 1:45 is when he says he got the phone call from her saying, "I let somebody in my apartment." 2:17 was when he made the call to the police.
And it's a 10-minute drive.
And it was a couple minutes. Well, I don't know exactly how long. Just said he lived within a few minutes.
Okay.
So as her boyfriend, he's obviously a prominent suspect. Police felt that he could have been jealous of the time that Angie had spent with Russell. The fact that she got a lot of male attention all the time, and that maybe going out with Russell tonight and then stopping in his apartment kind of rubbed it in his face a little bit, tipped him over the edge.
Also, anyway, you pointed out that she had woken him up.
She had woken him up, and he had to get up for work the next day. He told her that.
Mm-hmm.
They asked him for fingerprints, for blood and saliva samples, and for permission to search his home, and he agreed to all of it.
Okay.
The next day, they talked to Anita, because they had been out the night before. They were asking her about Ben and about Russell, but she said, "You're focusing on the wrong people. You need to talk to Lance Johnson." This was a new name to them. They hadn't heard about Lance yet. So she told them a little bit of the history there. And then she said that when Angie broke up with Lance, he had threatened her with a knife.
Hmm.
Yes. So.
Super chill.
Super chill. They did indeed go talk to Lance. He claimed that the whole knife thing was just a big misunderstanding.
Right. It was just a joke.
Sometimes you pull out a knife and you threaten somebody when they're breaking up with you. It's not a big deal. He also willingly gave the DNA samples that they asked for. And he told them he had actually been out of town completely on the night of the murder.
How convenient.
Was he with Sheila?
Sheila?
No, we like Sheila.
Okay, but I'm just saying. She was also out of town.
Henry? Henry the poet? He,
I mean the stalker,
claimed that he cared for Angie, and that's why he had been paying her all of this attention, because he cared about her and he wanted her
following
her.
Love, it was love.
Nothing weird to see here. He just really likes her.
Mm-hmm.
He also willingly gave DNA samples. It took a couple days for him to get hold of Russell because he just disappeared the next day. They went to his apartment. Couldn't find him. They kept going back looking for him. He wasn't answering phone calls. They finally tracked him down at his apartment on October 17th. So, you know, 4 or 5 days after the murder. And when they said, "We need to talk to you about the death of Angie Simota," he was shocked. Apparently, he had no idea that she had been murdered. And they were like, "This is big news in town. And you were out with her hours before. How do you not know?" He said that the more early morning after she'd been killed, he left to go to a wedding. He got a flight. And just got back home, and apparently none of his friends had called him to tell him that this girl he was hanging out with had been murdered.
Well, convenient that you hop on a flight right after someone gets murdered.
Also, he went out after, like, he went out the night before having to get on a plane.
Yeah.
He it's the 80s. The
Friday they don't night have Saturday that, morning.
They don't have, like, TSA at that point.
But, like,
he probably just
waking up early.
Did some cocaine in the morning to really.
He's what, in his 20s?
I'm just saying. Ben was responsible and was like, "I have to go to bed early."
Ben was like almost 30.
Russell was still a college boy.
I feel like I'm being attacked.
He also willingly gave them the DNA samples he asked for. So, during the autopsy, the coroner performed a rape kit, and he was able to collect DNA from Angie's body. However, forensic technology was much more limited at this time. We couldn't actually match DNA to people. They couldn't be like, "All right, well, we've got Russell's DNA, and we've got the killer's DNA. Let's test them and see if it's the same." What it could do in this early stage of DNA testing was determine whether the person that the DNA belonged to was a secretor or a non-secretor. I'm going to tell you what that means. It sounds super gross.
It does.
So all it means, if you're a secretor, it means that your blood type is not only found in your blood, it's also found in other bodily fluids like saliva and semen. It like secretes into them. If you are a non-secretor, then your blood type just does not secrete. 80% of the population are secretors. So most of us are. We're just secreting all over the place.
Stop saying that word.
So gross.
We're just secreting and like leaking all over.
Yeah. So the DNA testing was able to determine that the killer was a non-secretor. And one of those four suspects was also a non-secretor.
Ooh.
Any guesses?
Yeah, let's see. Yes.
It's like mystery date right now. Who are we going to prom with?
Okay, I feel like it's super sus what Russell did.
Okay.
Bailey, what do you think?
I do agree.
I'm leaning towards boyfriend Ben or randomly getting on a plane Russell.
I'm leaning towards boyfriend Ben and stalker, what's his name? Henry or something?
Henry.
I don't think, I mean, I would hope that Lance is, like, so over this that, like, he's not gonna just stab his ex-girlfriend, but... And then Russell was, like, didn't he just, like, meet her or something?
Yeah, they hadn't been friends for super long.
Yeah.
Yeah, but he already had a crush, and then it was super weird that he just, like, got on a plane and left for a few days.
He had plans! He had a wedding!
Anyway, did we follow up on any alibis or are we just taking everybody at their word?
I guess we're just trusting them.
Love that. All right. Who was the non-secretor?
The non-secretor was Russell. Now, this didn't rule the others out 100% because it wasn't perfect DNA testing. So there still could have been some, like, there was a margin of error, basically.
I love that.
But it was a big deal. It did really zero the focus in on Russell. Okay, so they brought him in for a polygraph test. He passed the polygraph test. However, Dallas PD had a few polygraph experts examine his results, and they all agree that his answers were deceptive.
Hmm.
He also had a...
polygraphs in the 80s?
I think they trusted them much more than now when we're like, oh, we know that there's...
Yeah.
They're not great. He also had a knife collection. Now, Angie was killed with a knife from her own butcher block. However, the detectives were like, well, he's got a thing for knives.
Yeah.
So it would make sense that he would grab for a knife if he was about to murder somebody spontaneously.
Mm-hmm.
But also her ex-boyfriend broke up with her with a knife.
Well, that was a misunderstanding.
Oh, okay.
That's just a thing you do sometimes when you're being
drunk. That's my bad.
Yeah, Bailey, everybody gets a little crazy sometimes and grabs a knife. It's nothing to worry about.
I've never had to break up with anyone, so that's...
That's why you don't know. It's very common.
Got it. Sounds horrifying.
Well, yeah. But, you know, love is love.
No wonder people stay in, like, relationships longer than they want.
Should, yes, because the knives.
Because of the implication. Okay. So, let's talk about Sheila, her bestie, who was out of town when she was murdered in their apartment.
Yeah.
Sheila got back to campus because somebody called and told her what happened. So she rushed back to campus. She went to the police and she was like, what do we know? What do we got? How can I help? She like wanted to be involved and she wanted to help solve.
She just comes back in the precinct. She's like, all right, boys, where's the court? Yeah. Where's the evidence? Let's get going.
So after talking with one of the investigators, she could tell that they were suspicious of Russ based on the conversation. And she offered to help spy on him. So she contacted Russ a couple times to kind of get together and like talk about Angie and, you know, what are we feeling? What's going on? And then recorded the conversations.
Can I just say, yeah. This might come to bite me in the back butt later. I am kind of, I don't know. I feel like it's pretty common MO for the killer to want to insert themselves in the investigation.
Yeah.
And
Sheila's a girl.
I know, and they typically don't murder, but
or rape leave and semen inject behind. Semen.
Oh yeah, that's true. You got me there.
They don't really secrete semen usually.
Fair point. All right. I'm just saying, I'm not counting her out just yet.
Fair. Be suspicious of everybody. It's a murder case.
Exactly. Exactly, Bailey. Don't rule anybody out.
You know what? If we're gonna throw Sheila in, how do we know it's not a suicide?
That's another good point.
Everybody. It's a murder case.
There's there's a pretty well-known case where a woman was stabbed in the back and I think the head, and they ruled it a suicide.
Fun.
Yeah.
She just fell.
You know how bitches be. They're on their period.
She'll be falling.
And stabbing themselves. Anyway.
So she set up these conversations with Russell and recorded them, hoping that he would say something suspicious. He didn't. That didn't net them any information. Police set up 24-hour-a-day surveillance on Russell and did the whole, like, they made it obvious that he was being watched kind of thing to like make him...
Gacy thing?
Yeah.
Nice. They brought him in so many times for questioning that he finally hired an attorney. I would have hired an attorney much sooner.
Well, as soon as they were following me, I would have hired one.
Yeah. I think probably the second time that they wanted to bring me in for questioning, I'd be like, oh, the first time wasn't enough? What's happening?
Yeah.
But anyway... In April, he hired a pretty expensive defense attorney.
Mm.
The attorney essentially told the police, either arrest him or we're going to sue you for harassment. And they had nothing other than the non-secreter thing and the fact that he had knives, and they felt like that was suspicious. So they had to leave him alone. Shortly after this, he left the country.
That's awfully suspicious.
Yes. By the spring of 1985, so about a year and no, because she died in October 84, like half a year, I was going to say a year and a half later. By spring, her case had been changed from active to suspended pending new investigation.
Hmm.
Sheila and many others were positive Russell had gotten away with murder. Like the police all thought it, a lot of their friends and her family thought it. You know, and were devastated. Sheila particularly was devastated because she was like, I was trying to help.
Yeah.
And he left the country. She was so deeply affected by what happened, she ended up dropping out of college during her senior year. She just could not finish. After a few years, she got married. She had kids. She was trying to move on with her life, but could never really stop thinking about Angie and the killer that got away.
Mm-hmm.
In 2004, so 20 years later, she's living in Nashville. She had a vision of Angela. She was sitting in bed. Bailey?
What?
Well, let me tell you some more. She was sitting in bed. She was reading her Bible for her Bible study. When she looked up from her Bible at the foot of her bed, Angie was standing there.
What did Angie say?
She looked exactly as Sheila remembered her. She was wearing the same outfit that she was wearing the last time Sheila had seen her. So it was like the very last time she'd seen her, there she was again in the flesh. Angie smiled her big, bright smile at her, and then disappeared.
Stop interrupting. I want to hear what the vision was.
She disappeared. She didn't say anything.
I couldn't hear that because you were talking.
Do you think when you're a ghost, you get to choose like what you wear, or is it just like the last outfit you were in?
I hope so. I feel like that should be a benefit. Should be appearing how you want to.
It depends if you get to go to heaven or hell. In heaven, you get your whole wardrobe. That's why you got to be comfortable. Always.
Always comfortable.
Always wear something comfortable because you never know.
Imagine like you're wearing like a new pair of shoes that you just got and you're like, oh, I should have broken these in, and they're just rubbing your heel and you get one of those blisters and then you're stuck in those forever.
Well, Angie was in heels when she was clubbing. Like, that's not super comfy.
Yeah.
No, remember her heels were in the...
Yeah. But yet she's not wearing the outfit she last wore. She was wearing the outfit that she wore last time Sheila saw her.
Oh.
Because I didn't write it down, but I want to say that her was in like a corduroy shirt and jeans.
It's because she went to heaven and she got her full wardrobe there.
And she chose corduroy.
Well, she gets to pick and choose. She gets to change. Full wardrobes in heaven. One of the benefits to being a good person. Bailey.
Be a good person. You get to wear corduroy. So, she smiled at Sheila and disappeared. Sheila was convinced that this was not some kind of, she wasn't dreaming, it wasn't some kind of a mental break. She was convinced that Angie had actually appeared to her and that Angie wanted her help. She became determined to seek justice for her friend.
Good.
So, from Nashville, where she's living now, she started contacting the Dallas PD all the time. Constantly asking for, like, what are you guys doing about it? Pushing them to test the DNA, because it's 20 years later. They can do so much more now.
She's
like, you guys have the DNA. Test the DNA. Over the next year, she logged over 750 calls to the Dallas PD.
It took that much for them to...
No, it took more than that. They were just, like, uninterested in doing anything. It had been 20 years. They're like,
Wait, you said that she made that many calls in a year?
Yeah.
So she was calling multiple times a day?
Oh, just constant. Oh my God. Just trying to harass them into doing something, basically.
Why wouldn't you want to just, like, it would be so easy. Just do the DNA and be like, oh, it was him. Done. There's very little police work there.
I feel like it comes down to, like, unfortunately, like, money, though.
That was one of the reasons they gave her. So here are some of the reasons. They told her, oh, well, we don't have any new leads on the case, so we can't bring the DNA out for testing because there's no new leads.
You don't need new leads. You had four really good ones.
They told her it was too expensive because it was more expensive at the time. They told her it wasn't worth the expense for a case this old, which is a wild thing to say.
Wow. Yeah. Especially do like a victim's like really good friend.
Yeah. Okay. And at one point, they actually told her there had been these floods in Dallas that I don't know a whole lot about them, but they really did like hit. A lot of stuff was lost in the floods, including a lot of evidence and stuff. And they finally were like, listen, we fucking lost the DNA. It was lost in the floods. We don't even have it to test anymore. And she was like, you know what? This isn't working. They're not taking me seriously. I'm going to become a private investigator.
Oh,
so she went and got licensed as a private investigator so that she would have the credentials to be taken more seriously. And started doing some investigating on her own while continuing to harass them.
Good.
So they finally did start taking her more seriously. And I also think that at this point they were like, she might actually solve this and that would be really embarrassing for us. That's just my theory, but I think they were like, well, she's got her credentials now, and also she's going to embarrass us.
Yeah, she seems like she's not going to give this up, and if she actually does solve it, that could be embarrassing for us.
Yeah. So in 2006, Dallas PD established a cold case department, and because of Sheila's constant harassment, they made Angie's case the first one that they pulled for re-examination.
Good.
It was given to a brand new detective who was part of this cold case department. She was Detective Linda Crum.
Oh.
Yes. She was able to track down the original physical evidence that had been collected, had not been lost in the floods.
What? They don't know.
Yeah, we don't know if the person who told her this genuinely thought it might have been, or if they were hoping she would leave them alone.
Give up.
But regardless, they found it and they sent it off for DNA testing. They tested it essentially against like a criminal database. It took 2 years for a match to come back, but a match did come back.
Can I guess?
You can guess.
Russell?
Ben.
Russell and Ben, final guesses?
Oh, what if it was neither? Lacey, is it neither?
It matched to a Donald Andrew Best Jr. Who the fuck is Donald? At the nightclub on October 12th, Angie had bumped into 36-year-old Bess at the bar and said, oh, excuse me. And he had immediately become infatuated with her. He had followed her when she left the bar, hoping that he would be able to catch her alone. He thought that maybe she was dating the man who was with her, Russ, and that they would go home together. So he was very excited when she dropped Russ off at her house. And then he thought, well, maybe she and this other woman are roommates. And then she dropped off Anita, and he got more excited. Then she went to Ben's, and when Ben answered the door, he thought, oh no, she lives here with this man. I've lost my chance. But he decided to wait a couple minutes. When she came out and headed home alone, he followed her. A few minutes after she went inside her apartment, he knocked on her door. When she answered, he told her that his car had broken down just outside and asked if he could use her phone to call for help. And because this is the 80s and we trust everybody, she said, yes, come inside. Once inside, he made Angie uneasy. He asked to use her restroom and she took this opportunity to call Ben. But she didn't really know what to tell him. She was just kind of hoping that him knowing that she had called somebody might dissuade him from doing anything. So when Donald came back out of the bathroom, he saw her on the phone. She told Ben, I'll call you right back, and hung up, probably thinking that he would be like, oh, she just promised somebody she'd call back. I can't do anything. It did not matter. He grabbed a knife from her butcher block and forced her down the hall to her bedroom where he raped her. When Ben knocked on Angie's door, Donald was still there. He realized that if he tried to leave now, he was going to get caught because Angie would scream for help, would, you know, run to the door. So he stabbed Angie. When she was dead, he left out of a side door and was gone by the time the police arrived. So when Ben got the call at 1:45, Bess was in the apartment with her. And by 2:17, when he made the call to the police, he was killing her. Like, that was how quick it happened. So let me tell you a little bit about Donald Best, because we were all infuriated to find out it was somebody that we didn't even know about. On the day of the murder, Donald had been on parole for about 6.5 months. Any guesses what he had served time for?
Rape.
Aggravated rape and sexual assault.
Wow.
When the DNA matched and Dallas PD realized that they had finally found Angie's killer, he was serving a life sentence on an aggravated rape and aggravated kidnapping charge. So he was already in jail for life, which is very unsatisfying. During his trial for Angie's death, several women came forward and said that he had raped or assaulted them. They also spoke with his ex-wife. She had been married for 3 years, during which time he was physically abusive. In 2010, he was tried and convicted of Angie's rape and murder, and he received a death sentence.
Oh, good.
However,
bitch.
In October 2022, he died of a heart attack on death row at 74 years old.
Oh, fuck you.
I would just like to know, like, why does death row take so long?
I know that there's, like, all, like, an appeals process and everything, yeah. But, like, decades they sit on death row.
Sometimes. Yeah.
Well, there's still that guy that's the
oldest.
Yeah, the suicide killer I did that's still on death row, and he's, like, in his 80s.
Yeah.
Let's see. Google AI says the extensive waiting period on death row stems from a combination of factors, primarily, that's the word, the legal appeals process and the desire for thoroughness in such high-stakes cases.
It's like they want to put them on death row, but they don't want to kill them, so they just let them, like, slowly die.
Do you want a more detailed breakdown? Because they have it, too. They have the appeals process, reinvestigation of cases, drug shortages. I mean, we can just do a firing squad. We don't need to use drugs on them.
Put an air embolism in them.
Oh, that's not nice. Constitutional concerns, death row syndrome, which is the isolation and prolonged uncertainty of execution can take a toll on inmates' mental health, sometimes leading to legal challenges based on those conditions. Backlog of cases, state-specific procedures, public interest, and cost.
I know, like, sometimes they're wrong and, like, they shouldn't be put to death. But, like, in other cases where it's, like, clearly somebody who is a predator.
You've got, like, DNA evidence or something absolutely solid.
And who keeps coming out. Like, whenever he's out, he attacks someone.
Yeah.
Like,
just kill him.
Yeah, I don't want
him out there. So anyway, after Sheila learned who the killer was and that it wasn't Russell. She actually met up with Russ to apologize to him for believing that it was him and for like really focusing on him. Because that whole time she was absolutely convinced it was him, as many people were. Russell is actually now a pretty prominent architect in Dallas. And Sheila is still a private investigator.
Good.
Yeah, she actually decided, she got the license to kind of like kick the police in the ass. And then she was like, I like this.
Yeah, so I mean, she was the one who was like, let's go undercover.
Yeah. Many people, including some of Angie's family, credit Sheila with identifying the killer because they think it was only because she made herself such a nuisance to Dallas PD that they got anything done.
I agree.
That's the power of friendship.
Oh my God.
She ruined it.
Yeah, that was a really nice story. And then
it was a really nice story.
Yeah.
There was murder.
I have nothing to say.
I could tell by the lack of talking.
You're really picking up on those context clues.
I'm getting better and better.
It's almost like she's an English teacher.
I don't think that that has anything to do with her ability to read the room.
Context clues are important in English and body language.
Body language is important?
Just in general, yeah.
Yeah, for understanding things. Well, that was sinister.
Oh, and we were sarcastic.
That's not your fucking line.
It's been a while since I ended things here.
It was very abrupt and I panicked.
I could see on your face. Do you want me to do it again?
No, she ruined it.
Don't we just end it now?
Cool. We hope you keep listening.